Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Financial markets continued their relentless climb higher last week, with concerns about bad seasonal performance in September proving no match for economic and earnings data. All eyes will be on the Fed this week as rate cuts are expected to resume. So joining us today to discuss this all after a late summer break, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, great to be back on the mic with you. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time with our listeners and their clients on this Monday morning.
Morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Yeah, it's been a few weeks. Still feels like summer here in the Northeast. So that's nice. It doesn't feel like things have changed too much.
Definitely. Hopefully we can squeeze out a few more weeks of summer, though. Jason, I know it's been a few weeks since we last spoke. Let's begin with market performance and what's behind this grind higher in markets. What do you see as the catalysts?
Well, it does seem like for equity markets, but also now even bond markets, that this kind of relentless grind higher just, you know, has continued. With the S&P, you know, again, saying it's at all-time highs, but also bond yields going lower. So you're on sort of both sides of both equities and bonds. It's been positive performance of late. Think about what are the catalysts behind this start, certainly from the kind of the overall macro. You know, the view that we were talking about a few weeks ago is that the consensus was economic growth and economic data would get worse before it got better. You'd see slowdown of growth. You'd see weakness of the labor market. Inflation would go higher. Sort of a stagflationary impulse to the data. This would play out largely, though, through the end of this year, like through the second half of 2025, giving way to better macro data in 2026, where growth starts to reaccelerate, inflation starts to roll over, and you have a Fed that's cutting rates. So from something stagflationary to something that looks more like kind of Goldilocks type of data. So investors have been willing to look through some of the weaker, the worse economic data in anticipation of sort of this better times ahead. The way I characterize it, it's, you know, investors kind of expect both growth data to inflation data and the Fed to kind of thread the needle towards a soft landing by next year, where you get these much more kind of benign conditions. And so even if you look at some of the labor market data, that has definitely sort of been disappointing. You know, we've had a weak number of prints for the past couple of months, plus now, you know, data that would suggest acquired job growth is much less than expected. The investor consensus thus far has been, well, the labor market is softening. It isn't, the recession risk still remains relatively low. So that's the macro conditions. That's why you're seeing kind of this ideal sweet spot of equity markets looking through any kind of growth weakness to better times ahead. Earnings have been solid. Bond investors, you know, do expect now rate cuts because growth is slowing. Inflation hasn't been as bad as feared because of tariffs. So again, you get some almost insurance Fed rate cuts. That's the macro narrative that's been driving things, you know, continually higher throughout the summer. It does mean there's not a lot of margin for error. If the Fed disappoints, it doesn't cut as much. If inflation in the next couple of months actually starts to real show impact of tariffs, or maybe most likely if we start to see the labor market further crack and get a negative jobs print to suggest that perhaps the Fed is not just doing insurance cuts, but now has to be more aggressive in cutting to stabilize the economy, I think then you'd get situations where the markets would pull back. But at the moment, everything is sort of lining up for, you know, from the market's perspective, that things will be good. We're looking ahead next year. This is reflective in volatility. You know, the VIX volatility index for equities is around its year-to-date lows. And then if you go to interest rate volatility, it's the lowest it's been since prior to the start of Fed rate hikes beginning, which happened in March of 2022. So it's about 3.5 years since, or almost 4 years since rate volatility has been this low. That also encourages investors of different types to take on more risk. Investor positioning at the start of the summer was, I'd say, you know, average, is maybe slightly below average. It's continued to sort of move in a direction of being a little more risk-on. That's been certainly a tailwind, but it's also not necessarily stretched. So this is really what's been sort of driving it is, you know, supportive macro, supportive expectations for a supportive Fed. Earnings have been solid, sort of, you know, better than the economic data. And then, of course, the AI theme, which continues to power forward. And last week, the news and the reporting from Oracle for their earnings further was like another data point to cement this as a key driver. So that's really what's been sort of driving markets for the past few weeks is, you know, expectations that things will just, you know, be quite good on the macro front, especially by 2026.
So Jason, with that setup in mind, the big story for this week is, of course, the Fed. It's universally expected that rate cuts will resume, but what else are you watching for?
I'd say it is all but guarantee that the Fed will cut rates on Wednesday. The only real uncertainty is whether they cut 50 basis points or if they only cut 25. Now, the market is pricing basically for 25 with a 10%, 15% probability for a 50 basis point cut. There is an argument for them to, you know, be more aggressive. If you look last year, almost exactly a year ago when the Fed cut, they cut 50 basis points. And partly it was because of the belief that maybe the economy is slowing and the labor market is kind of softer than they assumed. Turns out the labor market wasn't quite as soft, you know, as they were fearing at that point in time. But do you think, given the current data, is actually worse than it was last summer, shouldn't this justify 50 basis points of cuts? Well, one argument that they wouldn't is policy is also 100 basis points, you know, less restrictive now than it was a year ago. It's closer to neutral. You could be a little more methodical of getting that back down to sort of a neutral policy rate. Another factor is that inflation now is on the risk of kind of going higher in the near term, whereas last year it did look like it was continuing to kind of go lower. So both those sort of factors would justify the Feds that are doing 25 basis point cut this time. The real focus will be on what does the Fed do going forward. The market pricing right now is a little bit over 80% probability of the cut at the end of October, and a little over 90% that they will end up cutting in the mid-December FOMC meeting. As you look into 2026, though, it becomes more dispersed in terms of where those views shape out. A range of outcomes kind of could play out. Other things that I would sort of watch for in terms of this meeting that might indicate that path forward is the dot plot. This is the number of cuts that FOMC members think that the Fed will cut not only this year, but also next year and in 2027. Given there's only two more meetings this year, whether it's two or three, including this week, implied number of cuts, I'm not sure that really matters that much. The markets really are going to focus on what do they do, for next year. The Fed will also update its summary of economic projections for growth, inflation, and the policy rates this year. Given that we're already now at the nine-month mark, and it looks like the data is sort of trending pretty much in line with what the Fed was forecasting back in June, shouldn't see a lot of changes there. So the real focus will be on what Powell says, at the press conference. He could say cut, but sounds a little bit hawkish. He's unlikely to give too much guidance in terms of the path going forward, but he could tip his hand, similar to what he did at Jackson Hole, suggesting we need to be on a gradual path or clear path towards getting back to some sort of neutral policy rate, which the market would interpret as him endorsing cuts at every single meeting going forward. It'd be, have to take a very aggressive statement, I think, to kind of get the markets disappointed in terms of really a hawkish interpretation. And after the data that's come out since Jackson Hole, there's no reason for Powell to kind of sound more hawkish relative to Jackson Hole. If anything, he could sound a little more dovish. Our expectation, just to wrap up, is that the Fed will cut 25 basis points, and we'll have four straight meetings of 25 basis point cuts through the end of January, and perhaps a slower pace thereafter, so perhaps one more cut, but that really is going to be very much kind of dependent on the economic data. Well, the market pricing right now is for the Fed funds rate to get to a low of 2.8% by the end of 2026. A market pricing for sort of a neutral Fed funds rate is still around 3.75 to 4%. It's come down from where it was, but not nearly as much as what the market pricing is for the end of next year. Ultimately, the way I kind of think about it, and from a market perspective, an investing perspective, is that we know the beginning of the resumption of rate cuts this week is almost certain, but we don't know where the ending point will be. Not only when is the Fed going to be done cutting rates, how long this whole cutting cycle will take, but also the level at which the Fed will cut rates. And thinking about next year and the market performance, that's kind of really what matters. There's a range of outcomes, but that's the key point to focus on is the ending, not the beginning.
Now, Jason, that's interesting. You say that the ending point for the Fed rate cuts is actually more important for the future market direction than this starting point. So why is that?
Well, the markets are already pricing in this cut. They're already pricing in a decent number of cuts the rest of this year. But where do we kind of go from here? And ultimately, that sort of ending path of this rate cutting cycle, that's going to be a 2026 story. But the markets and investors are already kind of thinking about it, and it will become an increasingly part of the narrative that's driving markets as we get further into Q4. As the data comes in, we'll get a sense of, is the economy holding up? Is growth slowing down? Or the labor market slowing down even more, or is it kind of stabilizing and look like it's poised to accelerate next year? Whatever assumption you want to make right now in terms of the path going forward, it really embeds multiple different futures, meaning you know, you're making some sort of implicit assumption about the likelihood of a recession, because the 2.8% market pricing for the Fed funds rate in the next year is not sort of a pure spot forecast. It has to price in some probability that there is a recession and the Fed actually has to cut all the way to, you know, to zero or close to zero, like say sub 1%. In a non-recession scenario, you know, the market pricing would be more consistent with probably like 3 to 3.25%. But it sort of reflects that kind of view, you know, on a recession. Any assumption you make has to be on the assumption of sort of the stickiness of inflation and whether it gets stuck around 2.5-3%, or the underlying trend is that it's still towards sort of a disinflationary path that will allow the Fed to keep cutting. You have to make assumptions about, you know, Fed independence and whether new changes are just in Fed leadership with a new Fed chair, potentially 3 new members of the the governing board. Does this tilt the Fed towards a, you know, structurally more biased perspective in keeping rates lower? And so many questions about sort of Fed independence from because of political, you know, influence. And there's also the question, like, what is sort of a neutral rate of growth for the economy? What is the trend rate of growth of the economy? What is a neutral rate? The last one is I think the hardest one to answer. The Fed right now would say trend level of growth is a little bit below 2% and neutral Fed funds rate of around, you know, 3%. But if it turns out that the economy, you know, growth is solid, if AI leads to productivity growth, you could actually have a higher level of trend growth of over 2%, 2.25%. That would suggest that a neutral Fed funds rate is more like around 3.25% in that range. You know, so 100 basis points of cuts will be, you know, sufficient. You also have to make assumptions about, you know, what is sort of the amount of term premium or inflation premium that investors will demand, which really affects more of long-end rates, but that is a proxy for, you know, what the Fed might do with the policy rate, because the more the back-end rates rise because of perceptions about a too dovish Fed, that might, you know, argue for the Fed to do a little bit less to keep overall rates kind of lower. So there's a lot of things to kind of consider. Ultimately, some of them could be good, like, you know, productivity growth that's higher leads to like a higher neutral Fed funds rate. That's not a bad thing for the economy. It just means rates are higher because growth is good. That's good for risk assets overall. A policy rate that's going much lower because of inflation, or not because of slower growth, that's much more of a negative. And in some way, a policy rate that goes lower more because of concerns about political interference and a bias towards keeping policy rates loose, that might be a little bit better for growth, but it's also sort of more inflationary. And I mean, back end of the curve, you know, higher 10-year yields actually going higher, which may not be great for equities, at least as they sort of adjust to that logic. So that's why where we end up and why is probably more important to thinking about the market direction later into this year and certainly into 2026 versus the fact that the Fed is now cutting. I think that's already kind of well priced in. It's the path and destination that matters more for market performance going forward.
Now, Jason, based on all of these considerations, how do you recommend that investors be positioned at the moment?
Well, near term, as I mentioned, the markets are pricing in, you know, I think a lot of good news. You expect everything kind of to thread the needle, which does mean there's certainly scope for some volatility and pullbacks, especially given the run that we've had. But kind of zooming out to 12 months to maybe to the end of next year, ultimately we believe that we are in a, you know, bull market for risk assets and for equities, that dips should be bought at this point in time. If anything, for equities, it feels like the risk is skewed more to a bull case scenario of the markets continuing to melt higher as investors get sort of more bulled up, as the macro conditions, you know, turn a little more favorable next year, as the AI theme continues to play out. And investor position, as I mentioned earlier, it's, you know, it's elevated, but it's certainly not stretched. It's not like a full risk on, you know, situation. Like we've had earlier times just in the post 2020 period. Forget about the, you know, the dot-com era that people often reference when they think about kind of bubbles in the markets. Within that, AI continues to be, you know, a key theme, a key driver, and the tech sector as a key beneficiary. And we saw that again last week with the reporting from Oracle. Financials and banks in particular should benefit from, you know, kind of only rate cuts, but an ongoing sort of deregulatory push. So tilting within those sectors, within equities over, you know, overall. In fixed income, you know, the concern that we would have a little bit right now is the spread's very tight, is taking too much credit risk. If you want to take risk in the markets, probably better to take it within equities versus kind of, you know, corporate credit where you're just not getting paid, you know, to bear that risk. Rates have fallen a lot on these expectations the Fed's going to cut, but if it turns out the macro is okay, there's a, you know, pretty good risk that the 10-year actually backs up. I'd remind our listeners that a year ago when the Fed cut, the 10-year was around 3, 0.75%. It ultimately rose 100 basis points in subsequent months as the economic data turned out to be not bad as investors feared. I wouldn't expect that level of rise in the 10-year after the Fed starts cutting, but certainly the risk is probably more that the, you know, the rates go higher rather than significantly lower if the macro plane as we expect with no recession. All which is to say, kind of shortening up duration at this point in time, is the bias of that we would have. Higher quality credits, remains, I prefer to, kind of way to play it, including things like agency MBS, which have done well. An agency MBS probably more so than corporate credit, given that if there is, risks to growth, it's a little more, kind of government guarantee, a little bit safer asset class. Gold continues to kind of glitter and perform very well. And we think this as a diversification against some risks, but also probably first and foremost, a diversification against the US dollar. Gold continues to be a beneficiary. And it is very much sort of a consensus view that, or anti-dollar is sort of a consensus view among investors. If they're looking to deploy capital elsewhere, aside from other currencies, the number one area that investors are looking at is gold. So we think it has a structural tailwind that will continue to provide good diversification over time. So those are a few of the ideas that we like, given this macro backdrop, given what we expect from the Fed and the economic data to play out over the next few months and into 2026.
Well, Jason, this was a great way to begin the trading week. Thank you for dropping by, spending some time with our listeners, our clients, keeping them informed on CIO's positioning recommendations, and for previewing the FOMC meeting for us that will give us something to talk about during our conversation next Monday. Until then, Jason, have a great week.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.